Hare Krishna to everyone. Thank you very much for coming. This lecture, I mean today, tomorrow and the day after, it's a series of lectures. It's not exactly a conventional one in terms of the Bhagavad Gita daily class. However, the topic is very much practically related to the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. This is the result of a master's thesis related to a study I conducted on the Sannyas Order of Life within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This is the title of the dissertation. We expect to publish it. Basically, what we wanted to do is to share with the devotees these results, because are directly related to Srila Prabhupada's International Society for Krishna Consciousness, from which we are members. Many of us, for many years, I see some guests here. I don't know, maybe some of you are members or are friends, or I don't know exactly, but in either case, it touches us directly in that it is very contemporary, very real, connected to our lives. Sometimes we read the verses from scripture and we don't know very much what to do with them. But then when we have to, apply them or what we live, it's directly connected to what the scriptures say, somehow or other, or at least as practitioners, it should be. So this is an offering to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, ISKCON's founder, and to all his servants, to all the devotees who serve following his instructions, especially. And by extension, it will also it's a very small piece of research, but it may also contribute to other people who read it and who are not necessarily ISKCON members. They will get to know better ISKCON and particularly this aspect of ISKCON, the monastic order of sannyas. One reason when I chose the topic of research, there were different reasons why I chose the topic. I think I mentioned that to once here, at least, that it was a topic that bothered me. It was bothering me for different reasons. I'll try to explain to the best of my ability. It was bothering me to see, one question was, why such a high percentage of ISKCON sannyasis gave up the life of sannyasis? I didn't make a calculation, but I knew there were many. Even my own initiating guru at the time, he gave up. Bhagavan Goswami at the time, he gave up. And there were many others I saw where I was serving in Spain. Some GBC representatives, wonderful Vaishnavas, wonderful devotees doing so much service for Srila Prabhupada, but then they gave up. So that was bothering me. Also, it was bothering me, it doesn't make sense to me, we have such a high standard of worship, and then such a high rate of attrition. In my understanding, I couldn't put it together. How is that possible? Doesn't make sense. Then, besides that, I had an inclination, a natural vocation for monastic life, for living in an ashram, and willing to dedicate my life to preach Krishna consciousness and to share it with others. So I wanted to learn also from others who were sannyasis, those who were succeeding. There are also many who are succeeding, and those who didn't succeed. So this was kind of the rationale behind starting such a project and choosing that topic. When I started, I didn't know very well. I mean, I had these questions, but this title, Vaishnava Sannyasis in Modernity, came only later on. Didn't come in the beginning. When I started to do the research, getting answers, looking at different sources, then okay, now this is taking shape. It's about sannyas in modern times. And actually, Srila Prabhupada, he was a modern sannyasi, coming from an ancient tradition, the tradition, the Chaitanya Sampradaya, the purest tradition. Recently, last year, there was a mela celebrated in Bengala. What's last year? No, maybe even two years ago. Maybe even, no, 3 years ago. In commemorating the 500th anniversary of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's acceptance of sannyas, there was a big mela in Navadvip. I think, no, it was in Calcutta, and different sadhus came from all parts of India. And even Shankarites, yogis who are non-Vaishnavas, they came to express appreciation for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Srila Prabhupada came from such a pure background in terms of Sampradaya, the purest background, representing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was the most beautiful, full of ecstasy, of divine ecstasy, renouncer. He was certainly very strict, but he was very, very pure and indescribable pure, full of love for Krishna, not exhibiting norms of dry renunciation, just external asceticism. So Srila Prabhupada, he was representing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a modern way. And actually, in one occasion in the early days of the movement, in one of the first articles in the U.S., the reporter wrote something, I'm kind of paraphrasing, was like, he said, like Prabhupada was orthodox or conservative, he used one of those terms. Prabhupada was a conservative preacher or teacher, an orthodox. And Prabhupada became really upset about it. Like, how they dare to say I'm conservative? Of course, to the eyes of the Americans of the 1960s, he was seen like that. But if we look at the tradition, and this we will see in this presentation, actually Srila Prabhupada was very modern. He was able to adapt the essential principles of sannyas as described in Bhagavad Gita and apply them according to kala, desha, patra, time, place, and person. And he made Westerners into sannyasis. Really, very innovative. Very few gurus in India had given sannyas to Westerners. Very rare. I will not say there was none. There were a few, there are some cases, but were isolated cases. So this is a verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6. We can sing it once. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
anashrita karma phalam karyam karma karoti yaha sa sanyasi cha yogi cha nani rak nirna cha kriya. And this is Srila Prabhupada's translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life. And he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. The term is used, sa sanyasi cha yogi cha. So sanyasi doesn't mean to stop utilizing fire, as some orthodox sanyasis, they do that. No fire, not even using metal, because metal is heated by fire. So even no metal cups, no metal achman containers. Wooden is okay, but no metal. But here, the Lord, Shri Krishna, is saying that this is not necessarily the case. The use of fire, stop using fire, stop acting. That's not necessarily the definition of sannyas. But actually, it's in the consciousness. That's correct, actually, in that, in terms of consciousness. Of course, here we are looking also at the formal institution of Varnashrama Dharma and its application in the modern context. So there is a double meaning, and we find both definitions in the Gita. This we find in chapter 6, and Srila Prabhupada will quote this to say that actually all his disciples, followers, are meant to be sannyasis in that sense. So in that sense, the findings of this research apply not only to the official, quote, official monks, those who have been formally initiated according to the Varnashram system, which is described in chapter 18 of the Gita. The Lord refers to abandoning activities which are born from material desire, as the definition given by the kavis, by the wise, for sannyas. Of course, the Lord, again, he emphasizes, but even yagya, dana, and tapa, sacrifice, charity, and penance, should never be abandoned, even if one accepts formally sannyas. So again, he's giving, going back to the present definition, that the real sannyas is in the consciousness and not so much in the externals. So your point is very well taken, and it can be useful. This will not be something only about the sannyasis according to Varnashram, but to any devotee who is surrendering his or her life to Krishna, many of these principles can be applied in their personal lives. Exactly, yeah. Yes. Yes, certainly. Of course, in as the focus of the research is twofold. There is it focuses on the sannyasi as the highest division of the Varnashrama Dharma in terms of the final monastic order. Whether it is accepted traditionally will be after going through the other three ashramas, brahmachari, student life, grihastha, merit life. Manu Samhita will say so. According to Manu Samhita, it is not proper to accept sannyas without having gone through the other three ashramas. This will be Manu Samhita. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a scope to do it, and therefore Srila Prabhupada did it. So generally going through the other three ashramas, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and or else, according to the Bhagavatam, for devotional service, it is possible to accept sannyas without going through the Grihastha ashram. So we're discussing these terms. But I have a lot of material to cover. My suggestion will be, we have today, tomorrow, and the day after. It's in three sessions, we will not be able to cover everything of the dissertation. But I suggest I present a certain amount of material, and then we open for discussion. Is that okay? We would say, for example, up to 20 past, and then we have 15 minutes to half an hour discussion. Is that okay? You can take notes if those of you who brought pen and paper, you can bring it tomorrow. If there are specific points you would like to address or to explore. This is the general overview of the study. The first chapter includes it's a general introduction to the topic, as I am doing now, adapted to the present audience. Then there are foundational elements, that is, which sources were used in the study, what methods were followed, ethical considerations, etc. The second chapter analyzes the history of sannyas since the classical period, as we find in Shastras, sacred scripture, Manu Samhita, Dharma Shastras, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Upanishads. Going through the medieval period, how sannyas was lived, during the times, for example, of the Vedanta Acharyas, such as in the monistic line Shankaracharya, who is very renowned as a great sannyasi, renowned for having expelled Buddhist philosophy from India, practically, almost completely, and reestablished the authority of the Vedas, and particularly the Vedanta philosophy. Of course, as Vaishnavas, then we do not agree with the monistic, the impersonal interpretation of Shankaracharya of the Vedic scriptures. And then there are many sannyasis in the medieval period, Vaishnava sannyasis, Vedanta acharyas such as Madhvacharya, Sri Rama, Ramanuja Acharya, Sri Nimbarka Acharya. Prior to Shankaracharya, Vishnu Swami Acharya. And then later on, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the idea was to see how it has been, get a general perspective of how sannyas has evolved, if at all, since classical times up to the present times. And then we wanted to look into how the sannyas ashram has developed within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness since Srila Prabhupada founded ISKCON in 1966 and awarded the sannyas order of life to his disciple, Kirtananda Swami, in 1967. So how it developed, how many sannyasis were initiated in ISKCON, what happened, how many remained sannyasis, how many gave up, what were the reasons for those who gave up to give up. Those who remain, what are the reasons? What do they like of it? What gives them the inspiration to do it for life, to maintain their vows? And then more specifically, in the beginning I mentioned there was something that bothered me, this high index of attrition of sannyasis. So, okay, I wanted to know, what are the primary factors for that to happen? And this could be applied, using the definition of the Gita 6.1, could be applied to any Vaishnava abandoning devotional service. If we take that every Krishna Bhakta is a sannyasi in that he or she is giving everything to Krishna, the family, the work, the everything they have are giving, the devotees are giving it for Krishna, then what it could be, the same principle could be applied. At least there will be some parallels there, maybe not exactly the same, because the questions were directed to monks, but the basic principles could apply, and that's for you to judge when we go through the 10 factors that came up from the research, how much those factors apply to you or apply to other devotees. In terms of maintaining Krishna consciousness or giving up Krishna conscious practices. And then a brief summary analysis and conclusions. Something that was considered during the research was two dimensions, primarily popular practice, how we live, how his members live, what's in scripture, and textual tradition, what's written in the text. Because sometimes we have, even though if we examine, we have many things in Srila Prabhupada's books that we don't exactly follow to the letter. Like if someone will take the books, say a scholar. That's why empirical scholarship can be is highly questionable also in many ways. For example, a scholar will take the text and will say, okay, this is how they will... the history, they were living like that because the text says so. But not necessarily. Some of the statements, can you think, for example, of some statements related to the topic we are discussing, that someone could read it, say, 500 years from now? There are no historical records. The computers were destroyed, no pictures, no films, only a few books were found, Prabhupada's books. Some manuscripts were copied and transmitted through generations. So, can you think of anything that's in the text that doesn't exactly match what we, ISKCON members, do, or even what Srila Prabhupada himself will do? For example, that will be one. Of course, that's more... Yeah, can apply to anybody, but especially to Grihastas, but that could be one. Sannyasis should not have bank accounts. Is that in Prabhupada's books?
No, that's the original Vedic
sannyas. I'm looking specifically, it's a good point what you made, but specifically something said in Prabhupada's books that we could project this was happening 500 years ago in 2000, in the years of late 20th century and beginning of 21st century. But then, in reality, we see we are living it. It's not exactly like that. Taking sannyas is forbidden in Kali Yuga, okay. That will be one, although, okay, Prabhupada talks, he has given sannyas. In his books, he mentions about giving sannyas. So, could be, there will be evidence about Prabhupada giving sannyas in his books. Should not. Okay, that will be one. There are some statements like that. And we see that many times sannyasis stay more time in one place. So that, this is a difference from what's written and what's practiced in reality. Okay, this will be from the translations and the good. For example, about interaction with women, the interactions with women sannyasis have, including His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, are not as strict as written in the text, like in terms of talking or initiating women disciples and so on. So that will be a big one, that there is a big difference. And that shows that also indicates the idea of modernization of renunciation is there. It's one element which demonstrates how there is modernization of renunciation. But we do need to consider both what's written and what's practiced and be aware that they do not necessarily exactly match, even if they are very much related. Sannyas for preaching, yes, and that generally that happens. Although there will be also examples of sannyasis who do not preach, who are kind of reclusive even in our movement. For whatever reasons, I will not judge if it's good or not, but it's that happens sometimes. Okay, good. Something which is written that the minimum qualification should take sannyas, but maybe in the practice it's not exactly like that, as history has demonstrated. Good, yes, that's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Raghunath Das Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asking them, he admired or praised their level of renunciation. But then we see like iron clothes, sannyasis with iron clothes for preaching. I don't say it is not, I wear iron clothes. Vrindavan Prabhu. No, it's Narottam Prabhu it's doing now. Sometimes I wear, sometimes I don't wear. But. So, okay, six general observations emerging from this study. Sannyas definitely undergoes, and this is the practice according to Varnashram, definitely undergoes changes due to modernity. There is plenty of evidence for that. Even the most radical, it's there. At least externally. Maybe internally you can say the consciousness, that this will be debatable. Does that external affect the consciousness or not? This could be, there will be different opinions, will be subjective. But at least externally, there are definite changes. Some will say, well, you don't need to do a research for that. It's obvious. But anyway, this is part of the process. Then there is what some scholars like Patrick O'Leviel call domestication of renunciation. So it's on the same line of this idea that sannyas gradually goes from a more ascetic, we could say it even wild, practices like we are reading these days, fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This morning we were hearing from Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu how the followers of Maharaj Rishabhadev, who became an Avaduta Sannyasi, who was rolling on his own stool. Of course, his stool was perfumed, was kind of with better than the Paris perfumes. But some renouncers, some ascetics, for example, in the Jain tradition, they were imitating Rishabhadev's behavior. So it will be like the wild lifestyle, the python lifestyle, staying in one place, not moving, whatever it, if something comes, you eat. If nothing comes, that's God's mercy. We depend on the absolute. No need to move. So from wildlife ways of living to a more domesticated living in communities with certain level of organization, like the mat system found during the medieval period. And then when I read that particular evil's observations, I thought, it's not just domestication of renunciation, but it is modernization of renunciation. It's more domesticated, but even more than that. It becomes involved with technology, with the new trends in the world, whatever those are. Unavoidable, sannyasis are born to interact with it. In Radhanath Swami Maharaj's autobiography, you may have read that incident when he went to visit, you may know that he was living with the yogis and sadhus in reclusive places, in caves, in village, in the mountains, Himalayas and places like that. And he decided to pay a visit to the place where he had to live. How long ago? Perhaps 30 years ago or so, approximately. So, and then he found that the sadhus were out of the caves because the Indian government had decided to develop some type of recreation park or something in that area. And the sadhus had been moved to a city. I forgot if it was New Delhi but a big city, an area of a big city. And he was surprised to meet them with mobile phones. He went to the ashram where they were staying, and they had their mobile phones. I don't know if they were using it to preach Krishna consciousness or not. I don't judge that, maybe. But the fact is that they were affected, totally affected by modernity. They had to move from their caves. They were living in caves, and they had to vacate the caves because the Indian government said, these caves now are not going to be anymore, sadhus cave. This will be a whatever, recreation park or whatever they decided to do in that area. And this is happening more and more. Yes, yes, they were put in such places. And then they had their mobile phone. That would be another way. Before living in the forest and living places in ashramas, better facilities, even if they were austere in medieval times, some of them were not living even in houses, but they were following rules of Brahmanical principles. We will look into that perhaps tomorrow, which were more domestic than those of the classical times, or seem to be. There seems to be evidence that there is some changes, some evolution. Another very clear, very important element, and this is especially true for Vaishnavism, for Vaishnava acharyas. Sannyas becomes a platform to refute opposing doctrines, and from the point of view of Vaishnava teachers, doctrines against the personality of Godhead, denying God as a supreme being. Then another element is that ultimately real renunciation is internal. And in regard to modernity, it is, if properly applied, is very much connected to Srila Rupa Goswami's principle of Yukta Vairagya, that the real renunciation means engaging everything in the service of the Lord. If someone doesn't have anything externally, but in the mind is thinking of the objects of the senses, Bhagavad Gita says, Mityachara Sauchyate, Karmendriyani Samyamya, Yaste Manasasmaram, Indiyartam Vimudatma, Mityachara Sauchyate. Someone who renounces the work, the senses, the objects of the senses externally, but whose mind abides on those very same objects, is cheating himself. He's the only, we're cheating ourselves only if we do that. Even if others may become cheated also, but the real cheating is to ourselves. So that actually, like the slogan of the followers of Shankaracharya, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya, the universe is false. And they say when one takes sannyas, one automatically becomes Narayana. And this is a tradition. The medieval tradition of sannyas is very much influenced by the Shankarite idea that one becomes as God, becomes God, actually. And then the idea of as good as God is according to Shastra, by the servant of God is as good as God. But this idea may be tinged by this Mayavad contamination sometimes, the idea of thinking, I am as good as the Supreme. In our movement, the Sonal Acharya days, for example, could give us some, those of us who live through that period can relate to it. The idea of infallibility. Only Krishna is Achyuta. Only the Lord is Achyuta. I'm someone protected by the Lord, but by nature, the jiva is fallibility, is one of the natural conditions of the jiva, repeatedly stressed by Srila Prabhupada, to mark the difference between God, the Vibhu Atma, the universal soul, and the Anu Atma, or the minute soul. The minute soul can fall at any moment, whereas the Supreme Soul never falls. Unless he decides if he would like to have a lila, he could, he can do it, but he is infallible by nature. So, ultimately, real renunciation is internal. Then another aspect is sannyas. It's a position which has the two aspects. Sociologists of religion, specifically Max Weber, he talked about the routinization of charisma, explaining how a religious, when there is a charismatic leader who establishes a religion or he reforms a particular tradition, when he leaves the world, there is a natural tendency, and according to him is practically unavoidable, that in order to preserve the tradition, the message of the charismatic founder, a system of traditional authority should be followed. And this is what he calls routinization of charisma. So we named some, we did that in ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada left, so we need gurus. We rubber stamp gurus. Even though in Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada himself writes, we cannot make a Mahatma by rubber stamping him. We cannot say, okay, this is Mahatma. This is a liberated soul. Take Ananda, take Lungi, and then it's a liberated soul. And we say it's Guru, Mahabhagavat. We give a Vyasasan. Sorry for my irony, but this was part of our history. And we give a Vyasasan as high as Srila Prabhupada, or maybe 2 centimeters less. It was a little less, so less that you couldn't figure it out. Unless you had very good visual power, was very difficult to see. But that's not enough. So traditional authority. But actually the position of sannyas has both elements. There is the traditional role representing the disciplic succession, and a sannyas is meant to be, is expected to have some charisma to make a contribution. Srila Prabhupada talked about writing books, about preaching, going to new places, open new fields, developing spiritual projects in terms of spreading Krishna consciousness, particularly for sannyasis within ISKCON. So this is found, traditional authority and charismatic authority. We will discuss more as time permits the next days. And finally, what factors, in plural, not factor, but factors, contribute to success or failure in a spiritual life for sannyasis, for devotees in general. I will not get too much into the technicalities. The approach was a qualitative social research, doing interviews, qualitative meaning not looking so much about to the statistics, although we did look a little bit into it, but looking more into what the persons had to say. What is the quality, what is the message they are communicating, and letting them speak. Inductivism means, in this context, that there were not predecided ideas. I didn't know what will emerge from the research. I had some ideas, but I was open to see what will come from the research. And then the idea of constructionist, trusting that the free will of the actors in the history, they could have responded differently. So history is constructed according to the social actors, what they do, how we choose to respond. So it was not something predetermined, but it was something that was coming from the people themselves. They chose to become sannyasis when Srila Prabhupada offered to them in some cases, They chose to give it up, or they chose to stick to it, even if it was difficult. And then interpretivist means seeing the world according to the eyes of those who were interviewed. Let them speak. And the idea of case study, this was a case study, we could say, normally case study focuses on a particular community or place. In this case, was a globalized, will be a modern case study, was a case study of the sannyasis of ISKCON. And so this is very, it's a, we could say a community, but it's a global community. They live everywhere and nowhere, in one sense. They are in many places traveling, but they don't have a specific place in many cases. And then longitudinal elements refers to observing the case study through a certain period of time. So there were certain elements. Was not a longitudinal study. This will be, if I will interview again after 5-10 years more, this will be a longitudinal study, like looking at long period of time. But there were elements in that. We look at the history, what's written in the history of ISKCON, which is compiled. The interviews, they gave history. In the GBC resolutions, there was history, etc. Sources use primarily interviews, my own experience within the movement, participant observation. It's a bit tricky as a practitioner, but also as an observer. And then primary textual sources, Shastra, or books about the history of ISKCON, and secondary textual sources, books written by scholars about ISKCON, etc., or other organizations. Interviews. 12 sannyasis were interviewed, 7 ex-sannyasis, 6 focus groups. These were groups of devotees, different types, male, female, different ages, from different countries. The 2 ISKCON sannyas ministers. ISKCON has a sannyas ministry which was founded in 1988. And since its inception, there have been 2 ministers. In this case, you can find out. I think the interviews are anonymous, with one exception who requested non-anonymity. In the case of the ministers, you can find out who they are. Should I say them? Anyway. Okay. And the three individual senior non-sannyasi ISKCON members, who I thought they could give some another perspective as the groups. I wanted to get their input for particular reasons. The interviews were conducted from December 2008 to July 2010. So some pictures about ISKCON sannyasis. These are some old pictures from Prabhupada's times or short after. Okay, what to do? I think it's time to... I wanted to cover more, but... Okay, let's see. Let's take... what do you prefer? Should I cover... I wanted to cover the history, sannyas, from classical times until Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but maybe you prefer to ask questions and have some discussion. I give you the choice. Oh. 10, 15 minutes? Yes, I don't think we will have much time for discussion. If we do that, we won't have much time for discussion. We can do it tomorrow also. We have 2 more days. and then we could extend it. The third day you say, okay, 1 day more. I don't know, of course, someone is scheduled, but if we can move it, we could do 1 day more. I will not mind. Can you please speak loudly, because my... Well, we have to see with the organizer and look. Okay, the numbers are, in my memory, until 2010, 194 sannyasis were ordained in ISKCON, not counting those non-approved by ISKCON authorities, meaning those who took outside ISKCON. That will be something else. I didn't go there because it will be too broad. 194. Since 1967, when Srila Prabhupada gave the first sannyas to Kirtanananda Swami, up to 2010. From those 194, according to the statistics given by the Ministry of Sannyas, 54 were directly initiated by Srila Prabhupada up to 1977. There could be, my research was not, we could see if someone was missed on the list. Could be the case. I didn't find that, but this is the list which is in the records. 54 were initiated by Srila Prabhupada. From the 194, 84 gave up. So you make the numbers. 194, 84 gave up. From those 84, 40 were directly ordained by Srila Prabhupada, meaning they became sannyasis when they were very young men, which is one of the factors which contributed to, which naturally emerges, it's one of the considerations. So these are the numbers I have. No, yeah, 7 ex-sannyasis were interviewed. Yes, individual interviews. I could have done more, but I was told, my academic advisors told me, you have enough for a PhD with this, you don't need more. And in one sense, it's true. I couldn't say everything I wanted to say, had to condense. Mother Jayavadra helped me a lot to cut. She's very good in terms of editing, suggesting cut this. I was, no, please don't cut there. But it was.
Well, I'm interested in mentioning the real meaning of sannyas, renunciation of being internal. I guess there's a couple of ways one can go. One can make it come and emphasize too much external sannyas.
It naturally came. You will see it when we read some of the quotes, some of the statements of the sannyasis or ex-sannyasis. Naturally, these things came up, both by expressed by sannyasis and by ex-sannyasis, who will point out to be careful on the name of Yukta Vairagya to stop practicing the Dharma of the ashram, in this case, the sannyasa ashram, by accumulating more than necessary, or by going for the best food and instead of being more austere, etc. I don't know the year. With Rakhnish, with all due respect to but the meaning, no. The lifestyle they had was totally bogus in terms of sannyasi according to Shastra. So I didn't explore that. I did explore others who were more serious in terms of practice, like the Swaminarayan. For example, they have very strict aesthetics, much more strict in terms of certain ways, more strict than we have. I did explore the Ramakrishna Mission, because the Ramakrishna Mission also, there is a close connection, even if philosophically we are opposed, in terms of we do not agree with the Neo-Vedanta impersonal interpretation of a scripture. But in terms of organization, there are many commonalities. In fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, we could even say, inspired by his disciple who helped him in the organization of the Gaudiya Math, at that time, Kunja Vihari Vidyabhushana Prabhu, who later on became Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj, he had been a member of Ramakrishna Mission. And they copied some of the organizational aspects in order to spread the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The color of the robes and going back to the traditional. We will see this tomorrow. We will have time for that. Well, we don't. That will have to be substantiated, because the sannyas after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that we will have to look. It will not be the sannyas as we have it now, like the Varnashram sannyas, Tridanda. We will have to look at what type of sannyas she received. Although she was given the title Goswamini, which is a sannyas title. Like the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they had the titles of Goswamis. But in terms of initiation, it's not completely clear. We will look at that. She was an ascetic, certainly, but I have not read that she took a formal initiation. Although there was, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there is evidence that not long after, there was Vesha initiation, the Babaji initiation, which was one type of sannyasi, but was not red cloth, not saffron cloth. So these changes took place after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and then again after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. No, that will be, for a PhD, will be a topic. Could be a topic if we want to get into it, but I have many questions for the PhD, but we have to decide, okay, what do we choose? I may do it. What we can say, certainly we are improving. If we look at the statistics, just the numbers speak by themselves. So the work of the Ministry of Sanyas, even if someone could say it's bureaucratic, I myself was very upset with the ministry because I wanted to take sannyas many years ago and they didn't let me. Later on I feel grateful, actually. I didn't regret it. So, but at the time I was kind of upset. How is it you want to take sannyas and you have to fill an application? What's this? That was my, to me it didn't click in my mindset at the time. Couldn't accept it. But now I can say that the effects has been good in terms of diminishing the attrition ratio of sannyasis. Well, this coming in the study, it's coming tomorrow and the day after. We will do like... Yeah. Yes, I think tomorrow. Otherwise, we'll be too rush. Yeah, otherwise tomorrow some will not come. So I want to have an audience tomorrow and the day after. Traditional.
And does it relate to this issue of whether it's self-autonomy or whether it's just getting had or whether you have a social role?
Yes, like traditional will be having a position, I'm a sannyasi, so that means, because I'm a sannyasi, I'm a leader in ISKCON. Many times sannyasi is very easy, you become GBC. Even me, I'm a bad manager, they have offered me to become a GBC several times. I decline because I don't think I will not do the job and the seva I'm doing by accepting the position of GBC. I think will be a diminution of the service I can offer from the present position. But by becoming a sannyasi naturally, there is access to an institutional position. Sannyas in itself, it becomes an institutional position. Yes. Yes. Yes, it's paradoxical how they're socially dead, but they're ruling the show in one way. so the dead are ruling. So it's paradoxical. I don't judge it. It's good or not good. Some people will say, even some people. I was recently in the Middle East visiting. Preaching to devotees from Indian background, Indian families. And then they asked me, are you going to give initiations? And then I explained why I don't intend to do it unless Krishna will make it very clear to me that I have to do it. And I said, one of the reasons I'm not convinced about the system. I said, I think there should be, looking into Shastra and looking into also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings about Guru, that there should be more mature grihasthas who become initiating gurus. And then they were saying, this devotee, very senior, he himself could be a Diksha Guru. He's preaching, he's making many devotees in his place. They are taken care by him in many ways. But then he said, no, I don't agree with that. They were pushing the sannyasis should be, the sannyasis are more detached, therefore they should be the initiating gurus. That was his view. And in India, in ISKCON in India, unless recently someone else has been nominated, there is only one Grihastha Diksha Guru, which is telling how strong is the tradition of sannyasis giving initiation. This comes from the medieval time. But if we look into the Bhagavatam, the description in the seventh canto, there is the wife of the guru is there. So that means the guru was not a formal sannyas. In the description of the brahmachari, it says that the brahmachari shouldn't allow, if the wife of the guru is young, shouldn't allow her to care for him like a mother cares for the child, touching him and giving massage, shouldn't allow that, the brahmachari. I didn't get too much into the details of initiation in sannyasi grihastha. I do remember Gopinath Acharya Prabhu he did some research on that about the guru in the Upanishads, and he didn't find one sannyasi diksha guru, initiating guru. Only Yajnavalkya, when he took sannyas, he disappeared. So he was initiating as grihastha, he had disciples, he takes sannyas and he goes away. So this was the classical system. Well, it's in the Upanishads, so we can, according to us, we will say as practitioners, we'll say this is what we find in Shastra. Of course, there are reasons why. For example, the Nimbarkas and Pradaya, only sannyasis give initiation. I met one brahmachari from the Nimbarkas and Pradaya in the Parliament of World Religion. He looked like an ISKCON devotee. I thought, oh, he looked like someone from Mumbai. I approached him. Very nice Vaishnava. Braja Vihari, I think. Rajavihari Sharan. They use the term, instead of das, that is servant, Sharan. Sharan means surrender, servant also. Well, not precisely. According to what this brahmachari told me, he was very, very learned. He knew aspects of our books more than our own devotees in some aspects. Of course, he's doing some research. He wants to prove something. He wants to prove that Keshava Kashmiri was not the Digvijay defeated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was quoting Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Charitamrita to prove that. So he was very learned. And he told me, there is one acharya, I think it's Sriji Maharaj, presently in Vrindavan, but then there are other sannyasis who initiate, they get the blessings of the acharya, but they do initiate. And they don't have like a legislation very institutional, but they have certain activities a sannyasis should do before starting to initiate. They should go and live in Govardhan for a certain amount of time, chant the Gopal mantra so many many, many, many times, and then after that they can start initiating. So they have their own system. But I asked him, what about Grihastha gurus? He said, no. So it's that tradition is very prominent in India, very strong. More than I thought, which makes me think, okay, my idea may be very idealistic, but I don't know how. Maybe we can do it, but I don't know. It's It seems to be, although according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and we will have to, he gives some books, someone will have to search for those books, see if the books are, probably they are not in English, and then see what the books say to do a primary source research. Of course, for us, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, we take him as authority and that's it, but we will have to go to the primary source if we want to use the academic methodology. And he refers to Devatanu Vishnu Swami, Vishnu Swami Acharya, prior to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And he said he had 700 sannyasi disciples. So it seems that there was a strong tradition of sannyas also prior to Shankaracharya. How exactly it was, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta doesn't give details. No, he gave sannyas to non-Brahmanas. He himself was from a non-Brahmana family. That was also a revolution. Technically, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was considered from Kayastha family. And he himself, he was revolutionary. Shri Shri Radha Gopinatha Ki Jai. So we'll stop here for the kirtan for Shri Shri Radha Gopinath. And tomorrow we continue. I hope there is enough suspense so that tomorrow you come back. And bring your friends if you like. Thank you. Hare Krishna.